Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events when we come back. Well, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. It was Jesus of Nazareth who held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And if you'd like to do just that, why don't you call and write, or you can write to us through the email to the law school, and ask for those 64 life-threatening problems from the scriptures, and let's talk about formulating a real, meaningful, intelligent plan to survive Global 2000 and these other 64 life-threatening problems. They're called the Great Tribulation in the scripture. There are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the scripture, and they detail this New World Order and this Global 2000 genocide plan. And the scripture teaches preparation for this Great Tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. Why don't you just call and order that free general law CD package? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, that number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, we also teach a subsistence and survival school here at the law school. It's available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, today we're taking a look here at the international forecaster current events. What's going on in the world and what's been going on in the last month or two? I subscribe to the international forecaster. I recommend the forecaster and also recommend the privateer published in Queensland, Australia. Queensland, Australia, the privateer. You can get on their website. It's the-privateer.com. It's an easy one, the-privateer.com, down in Queensland, Australia. And then the international forecaster here in Punta Gorda, Florida. I'll give you their address. It's P.O. Box 510-518. That's 510-518, Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida. The zip code, 9 digits. Get this. It's 33951-0518. And he says you got to have that 0518 on there, or he won't get your letter. You can go to their webpage. It's International Forecaster. No, it's called The International Forecaster. You've got to have that the on there. So it's www.theinternationalforecaster.com. It's all one word. And then their email is internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. And we've been taking a look at some of the headlines that have been in the news in the last month or so. Mexico's strangest tourist attraction is 700 miles south of the border. So go down to the Rio Grande River. Travel 700 miles south and you'll find Mexico's strangest tourist attraction. It costs $15 and it's a mock journey that takes place in Hidalgo of illegal aliens crossing the Mexican border into the United States. The organizers say they're trying to build empathy for migrants by putting people through their show. We believe that they are preparing them for the actual journey. 90% of the 2,500-person community has made the journey to the United States, most ending up in Las Vegas. The Mexican government helped finance the creation of the ECO Alberto Nature Park in which the attraction resides. And anything that raises awareness in Mexico of the plight of illegal immigrants is welcome, said Jorge Bustamante, special Mexican representative to the United Nations for Human Rights and Migrants. So the Mexican government has a theme park 700 miles south of the border in which they have a little town down there. You pay $15 and they take you through the ropes and they show you how to illegally enter the United States. Now, the United States is on a collision course here, and I'll show you that. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 28. So if you think that this Mexican invasion of the United States is an accident, it isn't. It isn't. And he says in verse 43 here, the stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Here in the United States, and then you can expect Canada to go down with us. So you Canadians up there, pay attention now. there's going to be a merger between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And it's going to make all the sense in the world. It's for competitive purposes so that we can more effectively compete with the Chinese and with the Russians and with the Europeans and everybody else. And it's a part and parcel of the globalization and the New World Order. But what you need to understand is that this is a curse being brought upon us by our God because we won't practice our law, which we promised that we would practice out at Mount Sinai. Now, that being the case, Deuteronomy 28, then, the penal clause chapter to the contract is coming into full force and effect. So the Mexicans who are coming into the United States are the strangers who are rising up very high. And they're already in the driver's seat because if you take a look at the minorities now in the United States, it's around 65% white and 35% minority. So you can just about bet that the minorities are going to vote in a block against the whites. And there are more than 15% of whites who will vote with the minorities. So the minorities in America are already in the majority politically. So they're going to vote to open the border and let more of them in, which is exactly the opposite to what our God told us in Genesis chapter 11. We were to practice segregation, and we said, no, we made a mistake there. God, you got your head up the wrong end, and we're going to practice integration. And we did. So it's not a problem. Don't sit back now and fret and bite your fingernails. There's no decision to be made. That was made in 1965 with the Immigration Act of 1965, signed by President Johnson, to open our borders to free and unlimited immigration from everybody in the world. Now, it's called limited. You know, they've got limits, but it's unlimited. They've opened the borders because we want that cheap labor to come into the United States. And we don't care what your color is or what your race is or what your religion or ethnicity is. You just bring it with you, and we'll accommodate it. We'll bring teachers in to teach your children in your language. Now, this is the only country in the world that has decided to do this. I mean, you can't go to Mexico and expect them to bring in English-speaking teachers to teach your children in the Mexican public schools. But you can expect the Americans to bring in Spanish teachers to teach their children in Spanish when they come over here, whether they're legal or illegal. Now, I'm not taking sides on the immigration thing one way or the other. I'm a reporter, and I'm here to report facts, and these are the facts. And it's facts that you're not getting from Bob Schieffer or from PBS. And so it's in Deuteronomy 28, 43, and 44. Read them and weep. Now, Countrywide Financial, it's the largest home mortgage lender, and they say, buckle your seatbelts, boys and girls, there will be no soft landing. In early August, loan production fell 19% year over year. Home mortgage originations will total about $2.4 trillion this year, down from $2.9 trillion in 2005. And they will fall in 2007 also. They're now concerned about their heavily promoted pay option adjustable rate mortgages, known as ARMS, A-R-M-S, and they're soon to become a nightmare for everyone countrywide. Adjustable rate mortgages. The housing boom is over, and we're now on the slippery slope sliding down. And, you know, this doesn't happen in 1 week or 1 month. It started in June of 2005, and here we are in September of 2006. And as we progress into 2007, 2008, and 2009, you're going to see a slow, steady deterioration of our economy, which should this time, would be my guess, should this time take down the entire world economy and usher in the New World Order. They're a little behind schedule. Quite frankly, they plan to have this in operation by 2000. And the fact that we're up to 2006 now and we're heading into 2007, 8, 9, okay, so they're behind 6 or 8 years. But it's still coming, whether we like it or not. The Ohio Supreme Court ruled that private economic development is not sufficient reason under their state constitution in Ohio for taking homes. They halted a $125 million commercial development in the Cincinnati suburb of Nanwood. This is the first challenge to eminent domain by a state Supreme Court since the U.S. Supreme Court's infamous Kelo decision. Remember, Kelo, I did a report on that not too long ago. And sure enough, I don't know what the Ohio legislature has done concerning private condemnations, but I've already reported on this. But now, if you've been wondering about eminent domain, at least in the state of Ohio, the confiscation of your home in Ohio has now been stopped, at least by your Supreme Court. And on Friday, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, warned against protectionism that would crimp globalization. And it has brought mega profits to elite transnational conglomerates and misery to millions of American workers. Ben Bernanke is a true one-world internationalist, and he said protectionist feelings have cropped up throughout history when people feel that the increased global competition threatens their jobs and livelihoods. We say, and rightly so, he said, further progress is global economic integration and it should not be taken for granted. We'd say the elitists now have a problem. Well, we adopted this globalization back in the Roosevelt years, back in the 1930s. We said, well, that's a good idea. Our founding fathers, when they wrote into our Constitution these funding provisions for our federal government, put in import and export tariffs. They put in tariffs and import and export taxes to support the federal government. In 1913, we decided, no, we're going to stop doing that, and we're going to finance our government through the income tax. Instead of having the foreigners finance our federal government, we decided, no, we'll give the foreigners a free ride, and we'll finance our government ourselves. Now, that's, again, a decision that we had to make, and we made it, so we don't need to bite our fingernails and be concerned about the future. Globalization is already here. Globalization has reduced our manufacturing industry in the United States from 60% of the gross domestic product to 10%. Now, it's a done deal. The industrialization of America has been destroyed. Our machine tool industry has been destroyed. We have exported our steel industry overseas. We've exported nearly every other industry overseas, such as shoes and televisions and electronics and so on. And now we have to pay the piper. The piper is the collapse of our economy, and then ultimately political subjugation and national captivity. That is, a foreign army will come into the United States and occupy it. So says Bible prophecy. In fact, God said that it is going to happen swiftly and severely. It'll be swift, severe, and sudden, and it will become a byword among the nations. How could this great nation have been destroyed so suddenly? How could this great nation have been destroyed so suddenly? So that's what's in the tea leaves for the future. And that's why I've contended for many years, especially here at the law school and with our students, that you need to prepare for this political and socioeconomic change that's coming upon us. And it'll come upon you Australians, because when American defense is taken away, the defense umbrella is taken away from you Australians, just take a look to the north at those 400 million Indonesians and those 1.4 billion Chinese and those 150 million Japs up there and your wide open spaces, you 30 million Australians, and then ask yourselves, what do you think's coming next? Same thing for you Canadians and New Zealanders. What you missed in World War II, you're going to pick up here in World War III. Now, there's another story here. On Friday, Fed Chairman at Jackson Hole, now Ben Bernanke, remember, he's the world fiat currency fellow. He's the head of our Federal Reserve System here in the United States, and de facto, then, he is the head of, or he's running the economies of every country in the world, because America's dollar is the reserve currency worldwide. When the American dollar collapses, every other currency in the world will collapse right along with it. As we inflate, every other country in the world is inflating their economies, inflating their currency right along with us. Now, we understand that there was heavy use of puts and shorts on airline stocks prior to our latest terrorist threat in England. This is what happened prior to 9/11. Some foreign publications say the stocks were behaving strangely prior to the event. The shares fell about 30% and the big buyers appeared. J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Citibank. And there were a number of people who knew what was coming. Let me point that out, that in 9/11, a number of people had sold short stocks concerning the airline industry, knowing that when those airplanes hit those trade towers over there, that it was going to cause a depression in the airline industry, and they made a ton of money. The mere fact that people have been buying these stocks, these airline stocks, short prior to this England revelation of this new terrorist plot over here tells you that somebody was on the inside. And here's three of the insiders, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Citibank, who were in on the fact that this was coming down. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, I mentioned to you in the last program that one American in three now believes, when polled, a recent poll, one in three believes that the World Trade Center attacks was orchestrated by the White House and the CIA. I say that's pretty significant. Well, something went wrong on the way to the forum. We heard that from 1996 to April of 2000. But it's going to be different this time. Then we heard that it was regarding real estate. The professionals in real estate said, we will see gains of 5% in real estate forever, with the exception of everyone, probably except the readers of the International Forecaster, few exited the real estate market. Now, the drop in the last 14 months has surprised most people. The bad part is that this correction has really just begun. So if you have real estate that you need to unload, of course, now is the time to unload it. In fact, 14 months ago was the time to have unloaded it, or before that. I've been telling my students over the last 3 years to get out of real estate, get out of stocks and bonds. And, of course, you know, people are people, and they listen to you, and then they don't take action. But then later on, when the economy turns south, then they cry the blues, and they talk about police states and Michigan and the People's Republic of California, and they get real upset. See, a recession or a depression is when it affects you. And if it's not affecting you, well, then it's not a problem. unfortunately, when the world's economy goes upside down, it's going to affect all of us. It's just that some people are going to be affected more dramatically than others. And it would seem like to me that in your own self-interest, you should take action today to mitigate the changes that are surely coming over the next year, 2 years, and 3 years. Now let's take a look here. The economy is at an annualized growth rate. That is, it's 3.5% a year. The weekly leading index growth has now dropped to a 179-week low at Economic Cycle Research Institute. In the latest week, it's minus 1.6, and in the prior week, it was minus 1.4. The index was 135.2 on August the 18th. Now, they keep telling us that the economy is growing at 3.5% a year. And that's probably true. They're not lying to you. What they're not telling you is that they're inflating the currency, inflating the economy at the rate of 10% a year. So the reality is there's no real growth in productivity. It's just more money chasing fewer and fewer goods. That's the bottom line. So you don't have a 3.5% growth rate. You have a negative growth rate of around 6.5%. That's the reality of it. Now take a look as you drive around your town at the economic activity. Even Walmart reported in the last quarter that their economic activity was down. Now that's new for Walmart. Remember, they're the low-cost leader. And driving to Springfield the other day, I noticed all of the empty stores that are for rent. Something unusual here in Springfield, because in the recession in 1992 and in 2000, never affected Springfield. I couldn't see any difference at all. But I see a difference now, and they're telling me now that the economy is growing 3.5%. Now it's contracting 6.5%. That's where it's really at. Bank credit resumes, or has resumed rather, bank credit resumes its wild ways. And that is, it's up $21.9 billion last week. It's now over $8 trillion, and with a five-week gain of $75 billion. Year-to-date, it's $513 billion, or about 10.8%. All right, now listen to this. The banks are inflating the currency at the rate of 10.8% annualized per year. And the Federal Reserve is inflating at the rate of 10% a year. That's 20%, kids. 20%. We are borrowing $3 billion a day. $3 billion a day, three times, 365, is over $1 trillion a year just to finance our domestic federal budget deficit and our balance of payments deficit. Borrowing $1 trillion a year. Now, your economy runs at about 10 or 11 trillion a year, and you're borrowing 10% of that every year just to pay your bills and make ends meet. That does not sound like the richest nation in the world, and it doesn't sound like prosperity to me. Now, in July, in the Las Vegas housing market, there was trouble. New home sales fell in Las Vegas 41% year over year. And existing home sales were down 35%. Closings were the lowest since April of 2003. Median prices rose 3% for new and existing homes. However, the $299,000 new home median is down from $337,000 in June. New home building permits declined 47% in July. There are nearly 38,000 high-rise and mid-rise houses in various stages of development in Las Vegas. Real estate professionals who have a financial axe to grind have lost their credibility by denying the obvious. As far as we know, and we were the only publication to pick the top of the market as we did with the stock market in April of 2000 and the real estate market in June of 2005. And Chapman can take credit for that because I can testify that he did, in fact, tell us in the International Forecaster when these tops were going to occur. And it actually isn't too difficult. And if you, as a subscriber to the International Forecaster for about a year, if you just pay attention, you'll learn how to do that also. What he's doing here is he's taking the numbers that come out of the official government publications and then corrects those official numbers out of the official publications with the publications or the private publications, which are correct. If you're using government numbers, you'll come up with erroneous conclusions. If you take the government's numbers and correct them by looking at the private numbers, you know, look at Citicorp and Bank of America. See, they're also publishing numbers on housing and the American Real Estate Association or the National Real Estate Board and so on. They all publish these numbers. Chapman crunches the numbers, comes up with the correct numbers, and then extrapolates them into the future and says, well, let's see. Housing declines have been going on at this rate, and if you take this rate of decline over this period of time and extrapolate it over the next year, 2 years, or 3 years, here's where you're going to end up. And so that's what he's been doing, and sure enough, as you extrapolate it out, it comes out to just about, you know, where he said it would come out. I think that I'm getting pretty good at that also. Now, and I use the International Forecaster and the Privateer along with the Money Changer, those three publications, so that I can then correctly construe the Bob Schieffer CBS Evening News along with the NBC News, along with the Lehrer News Hour, along with CNN, and I can put these numbers together and come up with a little more a little more accurate picture of about what's really going on in America and therefore what's going on in the world. Now, the bank credit that has resumed its wild ways goes on. It says loans and leases surged $25 billion, and they were up $352 billion year to date, or 10.2%. Commercial and industrial loans have expanded at an 11.3% rate. Real estate loans expanded 11.3%. They're up 10.8%. Consumer loans gained $2.1 billion. And as you look at these percentages over here, I want you to notice that the percentages are 10, 11, 12, 16%. They tell us inflation now is down around 4 or 5%. No. Inflation runs at the same rate as money creation. If you want to know what the inflation rate is, just look at the money creation rate. If they're inflating at 10%, then the rate of inflation is 10%. But it takes 36 months for that inflation to hit prices out here in market land. So by the time the inflation hits us, it was the money creation 3 years ago that created today's higher prices. Now get this. The money that's being created today is not going to show itself in higher prices for three more years. It's going to be 2009 before we start to get the effect of the numbers that we're reading about today translated into higher prices. And of course, these higher prices, if you're getting higher wages, higher commissions, if you're making 10% a year more money, then it's not a problem to you. But you Social Security people, as an illustration, they gave you a 3.4% increase, cost of living increase last November. The inflation rate is running 10, 11%, and they gave you 3.4. That means that your actual purchasing power went down by about 6.5%. Can you follow that? Now, you were buying Kansas City strip steaks, you know, once or twice a month, and now all of a sudden, instead of KC strip steaks, now you're eating stew meat. Pretty shortly, you'll take a look at the price of stew, and then you'll trade that in for hamburger. And then pretty soon, you'll trade in the hamburger for chicken, the chicken for pork, and so on. And what this is a steady deterioration in your standard of living. Your rents go up, your taxes go up, the gasoline goes up, and your rents, taxes, and gasoline aren't going up 3.4% a year. They're going up 10, 16, and 35%. The price of natural gas is up 35%. Gasoline, 27% over last year, and on it goes. Taxes, your property taxes are up 13% this year from last year. Come on, kids, it's time to wake up and get real. Inflation is a killer, and inflation is running at 10% plus every year, and has since 2000, since the Republicans took the control of the government back in 2000. And I'm not criticizing you Republicans now. You know, you're doing what has to be done. But the longer you postpone this economic creation, or this correction, the more severe and the longer it's going to run. That's been the history that goes back thousands of years. Governments always interfere in the free marketplace. They always have. They do now. And they always will continue to in the future, because whenever the people cry out to the government comes up with a plan. And the plan always makes the circumstances worse. Now, if you want to take a look at an economy that's growing, take a look at China. The Chinese economy, once they got off of communism and into free market economics about 15 years ago, their economy has been growing at 10% a year for 15 years. And now, of course, all you guys out there in the environmental movement will say, yeah, but look at all their pollution. Okay. I'm looking at their pollution. But the bottom line is, when you Americans get tired of your poverty, and then you turn around and you extricate yourself from communism and go back to your free market economy, you too can have prosperity like the Chinese have. And all the Chinese have done is to learn that lesson from history, that when government interferes in the marketplace, then it constrains its economy. The more OSHA inspectors and the more EPA inspectors and the more red tape you have, the slower things work. Take a look at Hurricane Katrina. You people down there in the Gulf Coast and in New Orleans have been waiting a year to get money to rebuild your houses, and you haven't got it yet. It's been appropriated by Congress, and it's filtering its way down. Now take a look at the war in Lebanon. The Hezbollah guerrillas over there are distributing money that comes from Iran directly to the people, and the people are rebuilding. Lebanon will be rebuilt before New Orleans or Biloxi, Mississippi. And that's because the Arabs don't practice communism. They practice free market economy. In America, when we practiced free market economy, rebuilt San Francisco in 36 months. From the 1906 earthquake, it took 36 months to rebuild San Francisco. And they're talking about 10 to 15 years to rebuild New Orleans. And that's the difference between free market economy and from the top-down economy, or a centrally directed economy like we have here in the United States. Our economy is directed from Washington, and it just takes the bureaucracy forever to get anything done. And then when they do it, they waste a tremendous amount of money. I don't know what the proportion is going to be, but my guess would be that probably 25% of all of the money that's going to be spent by government on the Gulf Coast and Hurricane Katrina is going to go into the pockets of Bechtel and the various corporations, you know, that are taking these no-bid contracts. It's not going into the houses and the buildings and the infrastructure and the businesses of the people down there, but it's going to build, in fact, Mayor Ray Nagin the other day was on the 60 Minutes, I believe it was, and he said they're going to build a 62-story office building down there, condominiums, I guess, 62-story building. Excuse me, but I thought, if it was my understanding, I thought that the real problem in New Orleans were the thousands of single-family homes that were destroyed out there in the districts of in the neighborhoods of New Orleans. So when the federal money comes in, it's going to build this big building, and I'm sure that there's some corporation somewhere going to make a lot of money off of it. But what the hell does that do for all of you people out there that need the money to fix your houses out there in the neighborhoods? I don't know, kids. You know, it's not something, you know, that should be unusual or strange. Wherever communism has been tried in the past, it's never worked in Russia or China or Eastern Europe or any place that anybody's ever tried it. Now, why you people in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States believe communism is going to work here is beyond me. But keep after it until it finally puts you into abject poverty. And then remember, when you're in abject poverty and when you can't build your house and you don't have the money and the government isn't helping you, remember that it's communism that puts you there, not the Ten Commandments, not the Bill of Rights, and not the Constitution of the United States. Communism puts you there. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here. Now, hang on a second while I remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's all there is to it. It's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily wholly endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review or vice versa. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the international forecaster and current events, kind of taking a look at where the world is today, where it's been, where it is today, and where it's headed. I recommend this publication. It's P.O. Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida. That's P.O. Box 510-518. Six-digit post office box in Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida. The zip code 33951-0518. Again, that's 33951-0518. You've got to have that zip plus 4 or you won't get your letter. Now, they've also got a web page. It's called theinternationalforecaster.com. It's an easy one. Just flip over to theinternationalforecaster.com. Or you can send them an email, and then it's theinternationalforecaster@yahoo.com. It's an easy one, internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. One of his subscribers wrote a letter. He said, "Thank you for your weekly writings. I'm a recent fan. However, I do bring my own issue when I try to understand how the world works. I'm one of those who realized that 9/11 was an inside job done by powers within the United States government to the United States. Not a happy thought, and one that kept me awake for about 2 years while I studied the issue. Now, there is the dominant belief that it was done by terrorists, but that is belief. If you study the facts, you have no room to accept that conclusion. Your forecaster of August 2006, number 2, volume 10, number 82, has caused me to write this. The United States is supposedly fighting terrorism. But once you realize the terrorists are within the administration, perspective changes. Many years ago, I was asked to teach in Kenya. I'm old enough, about 1940, to remember the Mau Mau terrorists of the mid-50s. In the 70s, when I went to teach in Mombasa, they were my hosts. It was there that I learned that one man's terrorist was another man's freedom fighter. Today's war on terror is a simplistic bit of jargon for a war on freedom. It's a war on freedom everywhere, including, as you so often point out, particularly within the United States. So if you study 9/11 a little, you'll have to conclude, as I did, that the attacks on the U.S. are from within, not without. And already, you should know that every other bit of evidence is there, and I would be happy to provide more info or sources. Please keep up the good work. I reported to you earlier that one out of three, I saw this the other day, believes, as this man does, that it was an inside job created in the White House. There's a section here on page 12 that deals with gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and diamonds. The International Forecaster is published as an economics paper. But I noticed here that Bob Chapman goes a lot further than just economics. He covers politics and the social fabric of the country, and as well as economics and politics. And a lot of good news items in here. Probably he's going through, USA Today or CNN or something on that order, or maybe even a subscriber to AP or UP or Reuters or somebody. And he pulls out a lot of very interesting and unusual news pieces that you don't see on the mainstream press or in the mainstream press. Here's a little piece that comes from CSTO. This is a Collective Security Treaty Organization. You ever heard of CSTO? Well, we didn't see anything in the Western press regarding military exercises of the Collective Security Treaty Organization called CSTO that included Russia, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. These war games are part of an anti-terrorism program planned as a response to United States military threats in the region, including attacks against Iran. Separately, Iran has held its own military exercises along its own borders. Russia is leaning more and more towards the Iranian view that countries from outside should be banned from having armed forces in the Caspian Sea region. Iran's maneuvers are in process and will possibly last until or well into October. Iran is not currently a member of CSTO, but has observer status in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Iran has been asked by China and Russia to join. If Iran was attacked by the United States and Israel, we speculate that China and Russia will come in on the side of Iran. As well, Russia and India signed a military agreement. So if the United States, Israeli forces attack Syria and Iran, we would have World War III to contend with. World War III. Now, you know, we don't know from our own personal perspective whether or not World War III is on the horizon. All I know is, Will Rogers used to say, what I read in the papers. But what I'm seeing in the papers is that the United States has just created a special commission within the intelligence community to monitor and then report to the president daily personally. This is this new intelligence czar, Negroponte, to report to President Bush every day on the progress of regime change in Cuba and Venezuela. Now, the Cubans over here want to drill for oil, undersea oil, off their coast, and the United States is up in arms about that. Now, it seems like to me, just being an observer here on the sidelines, that if the United States can drill for oil in the Gulf of Mexico off our coast, and if Mexico can drill for oil in the Gulf of Mexico off of their coast, why can't the Cubans drill for oil off of their coast? You know, somehow or another, it just seems, you know, tit for tat makes sense to me. I'm not a politician, don't have letters after my name, but just common sense says, maybe there is oil off their coast. Now, the Venezuelans are drilling offshore in the Gulf of Mexico or the Caribbean. All right, now, with that little tidbit out of the way, why would we be interested in regime change in Venezuela, which is a democratically elected government and then reconfirmed during a period of time 2 years ago when we were trying to overthrow this fellow who was, I can't call him a dictator, he's the president of Venezuela, he was elected, and then they were trying to overthrow him. And the people came out and reconfirmed him. How do you like that? And then you have a democratically elected government in Gaza, the West Bank, and in Lebanon. And the United States and Israel are in the process of destabilizing those democratically elected governments through the use of force. And then we're over in Iraq, and we're over there trying to impose upon them a democratic government. Now, it just seems like to me that what we're opposed to is the democratically elected governments that are opposed to the United States. So it doesn't make any difference whether you're a dictator in Cuba. We want regime change. And if you're a democratically elected leader in Venezuela, we want regime change. And we're going to impose a democratic form of government on Afghanistan and upon Iraq, whether those people want it or not. They deserve it, and we're going to give it to them. And in the meantime, we're going to build the largest embassy in the world in Baghdad, a country that we're telling everybody that we're going to withdraw from militarily over the next year or two. Hey, children, why don't we wake up? You know, it isn't that we're not being informed. Hell, even USA Today, you know, or the Wall Street Journal, these facts are not something that I'm dreaming up. I'm just relating these facts. Why would you build the largest embassy in your chain of embassies in a country that is so destabilized as Iraq if you're intending to withdraw from the country over the next 12 to 24 months? I mean, hell, if I was going to build a 104-acre embassy, wouldn't it make more sense to build it in a friendly country like Australia or England or France? Hell, I could even see building a 100-acre embassy in Russia before I could see building one in Baghdad. Couldn't you? So when our government is building five big air bases in Iraq and the biggest embassy in the world in Iraq, it sends a signal to me that the United States government is in Iraq, and boys and girls, we are there forever. Kind of like Europe. You know, we went over there and liberated Europe, and the United States Army is still in Germany, but the Russian Army has withdrawn from Germany. The United States Army is still in France, but the Russian Army was never in France, and they have withdrawn from Czechoslovakia and Poland and Ukraine and Eastern Europe. Now, you know, you start talking about hegemony over here, it would seem like to me that it's not the Russians who are global empire builders, but it looks more like the Americans, who now have troops, by the way, in 120 countries around the world. Now, I'm not opposed to having troops in 120 countries in the world. I guess that's what empires are made up of. But they keep telling us that America is not an empire and has no intentions of being an empire. Why don't we just come out and say, America is the world's only superpower. We have our forces in 120 countries in the world. We have an empire, and if anybody squirrels around with us, we're going to nuke them, or we're going to straighten them out. And just take a look at Afghanistan and Iraq, and that'll send you a signal. I mean, you know, why not just stand up and say, okay, let's call a spade a spade. All right, so keep in mind now, the United States has troops, and we have security agreements in three or four of these stands over here in Central Asia. And, of course, that is a part and parcel of our program to surround the Middle East oil fields. So the United States, you know, is actively working to control 70% of the world's oil, which is good for us guys. I'm not complaining. It's good for us guys. But it just inflames everybody else in the world, and I'm not sure that the rest of the people in the world are going to sit still for that. And so they're resisting us over in Iraq. They're resisting us in Iran. The Muslim world is opposed to us by about 80 to 20%. About 80% of Muslims in every Muslim country in the world is opposed to the United States and opposed to our foreign policy. Now, it's either that all of those people are wrong and we're right, or else maybe those people do have a couple of good points and maybe we've made an error or two and we ought to rethink it a little bit. You ever thought about that? Maybe we ought to rethink that. We're reviewing the International Forecaster in current events. There's a couple other items over here that I want to cover before we run out of time. Over here in Africa, in rural, impoverished South Africa, there's been an outbreak among AIDS patients of a type of tuberculosis that is extremely drug-resistant. 53 patients who have contracted this TB, 53 out of, of 53, 52 of them died. Now, one guy survived out of 53, some new variety of TB. The patients are virtually untreatable. The emergence of a potent TB strain is a major setback for HIV treatment, and it's an additional cause for concern about the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections around the world. Now, that's just about as close to 100% fatality as you can get. Now, remember that TB was eradicated back in the 1950s. Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. Now it's making its resurgence. So which tells me that it wasn't really eradicated. No, it wasn't. And they told us that smallpox has been eradicated back in the 1970s. And yet, they tell us that it's a germ warfare agent, and that they're afraid that somebody's going to loose this germ warfare agent called smallpox upon the American population, and it's going to devastate us because we haven't been vaccinated, and we haven't had the disease, and we don't have any natural immunity. Now, what's that tell you? Doesn't it tell you that smallpox has not been eradicated, and in fact, it's a ticking time bomb that threatens you and threatens me and everybody else, and probably you ought to be prepared for that so that you can take some kind of effective action, kind of like the bird flu? Wouldn't you think that maybe you should take some kind of effective action? That's why we teach a class here on subsistence and survival based upon Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. I know that we're reactionary here, and I don't deny that. I don't think we're quite paranoid, but certainly reactionary. It's not what the average Joe Sixpack American does. And I want to point out that when I was a boy, you know, looking back 60, 70 years, every American family had a one-year supply of food. I don't know of anybody that didn't. It was just normal. Just everybody did it. Today, if you've got, you know, some kind of a stock of food on a pantry someplace, somebody, they look at you and say, well, are you some kind of a hoarder? Are you some kind of a right-wing reactionary fanatic? I mean, that'd be a 30-day supply. What if you had a whole year or 2 years or 3 years or a four-year supply of food? I mean, what if you had 200 cans of coffee on your shelf, which is maybe a 4 or 5 year supply of coffee? What do you think the average person would think of you? And of course, you wouldn't want to be thought poorly of, and so you don't have it. But I just wanted to put that out, you know, for your consideration, because it could well be that when America is no longer able to pay Indonesia for their coffee, do you think they will continue to send that coffee to us? Do you think the Chinese are going to continue to send us big screen TVs and shoes if we don't pay them? And, you know, we haven't paid for many years, and we are borrowing money today at the rate of $3 billion a day to pay the Chinese in paper. Those are promises to pay. That's not actual payment. We're not giving them any gold or silver. We're not giving them any Caterpillar tractors or Cadillac automobiles. We're giving them worthless paper promises. Do you think they'll do that forever? Just because we deserve it. A little something for you to think about between now and next time. We're about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law schools and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program. We do that for adults on compact disc. If you want more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. And that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.